Seeing none, Rich, we'll go ahead and take up your report.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Happy St. Patrick's Day. I'm not wearing any green, but I think the grass behind me is, so we'll call it good enough. Instead of having item 14 on the agenda, that was sort of a holdover from last. I was going to make that a standing item. I'll go ahead and report an update on the marina odor situation in my report here. And there's not much to update at this point. We did receive one complaint the day of and another complaint the day after our meeting last month. So we've received two complaints this past month on odor. We're still working with Keith Day and company to review operational activity to evaluate emissions from the compost operations there at the facility. A lot of the public feels that that's where the odors are coming from, as you heard at our last meeting. And we think that's probably one of the sources for sure. And it's on a collision course with the implementation of Senate Bill 1383, which is the short-lived Climate Pollutants Reduction Act, which is requiring 75% reduction or diversion from the landfills on food waste from 2014 until 2025. So that means there's going to be a lot more compost, there's going to be a lot more odor. And although these facilities do generate a lot of VOCs, volatile organic chemicals, which actually form with heat and sunlight to form ozone, a pollutant we just came into the standard for. So it's going to be challenging for our community as well as communities throughout the state because of this new law. And unfortunately, CalRecycle did not really engage the air agencies when they came up with this new bill. So it's a challenge all around. Engineering hosted a workshop on February 24th with our sources, subject to expanded requirements for annual reporting toxic emissions to CARB. We received the expanded reporting requirements, so we'll work with the sources and CARB to facilitate meeting the additional requirements, and they're mostly reporting requirements. Our compliance team attended EPA's training on reporting high priority violations and federally reportable violations on February 25th. On March 2 and 4, our implementation consultant Vision 33 provided us daily user training for Acela with engineering, compliance, and accounting to learn how we can use Acela for our routine tasks here. That's our new database of the district. We also had a session on how to use Acela mobile apps so engineers and inspectors can complete inspections in the field using a tablet or a smartphone. And this is an interesting one. Our asbestos team met with the demolition contractors for Moss Landing Power Plant regarding dismantling the structures surrounding units 6 and 7. Those are the tall stacks. So it looks like those things are asbestos laden, and they were going to just try to seal them up and maintain them as best as possible. But now they're sort of scavenging equipment, and they're going to be taking all of those buildings down. So as a result, they're going to need demolition permits and asbestos surveys and abatement when they do deconstruct those buildings. We continue to observe weather conditions and air quality in the San Lorenzo Valley, and we have yet to declare a spare the air alert, which is voluntary. We have had pretty favorable meteorological conditions, meaning pretty unstable air has been moving through the area. So not a lot of smoke has been hanging out, and it's not been detected at our monitors. We did have an exceedance this January 20th at the Boulder Creek Seasonal Air Monitoring Station. We continue to implement our wood stove changeout program. So it looks like at this point, 98 applications have been received, 7 are from low-income applicants or residents. So we've obligated about $150,000. We've got about $12,000 or $15,000 remaining. So we're still getting the word out, and we've got a lot of applications that will probably be coming in. So we anticipate we will be running out of funding this year. Applications are also being accepted for the diesel engine and equipment replacement program, which is state grant funds for replacing high polluting diesel equipment with cleaner burning models The application ends on March 19th. The staff will then evaluate the applications and rank potential projects based on cost effectiveness. This is a good one. CAPCO and EPA Region 9 will be holding a virtual conference entitled Smoke Impacts in California, 2020 Lessons, 2021 Actions. And this will take place on Tuesday, April 20th from noon to 5 p.m. and Wednesday, April 21st, 12:30 to 5 p.m. And as I said, virtually. The conference is for agency technical experts in public health, environmental health, emergency management, incident meteorology, air quality measurement, and forecast management, forest management. There will be a recap on the wildfire smoke impacts from the 2020 fires and an opportunity to develop and exchange ideas to prepare and inform communities in 2021 and beyond. The focus will be on understanding current smoke information, measurement tool limits, public outreach, rapid response tools, and mitigation measures, both at the community and individual level. Welcome keynote will be delivered by Acting Regional Administrator for EPA, Deborah Jordan. And closing keynote will be delivered by California Natural Resources Secretary, Wade Crowfoot. And then lastly, I have some sad, somber news. Anne has let me know that she's going to retire. I told her she was an indentured servant and couldn't, but she's not taking that seriously. So, but the good news is she's given us enough time. She's announced it for the end of July. So it's going to be really difficult to fill her shoes because she does so much here and wears so many different hats. I know that's a cliche, but it's true for Anne. So we're really fortunate to have enough time to recruit for her position and to have some overlap so Anne can help train her replacement. So if you know of anybody, clerk, administrative, executive assistant, please let them know that we will be announcing a job soon. So that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Rich. Any questions from board members as to Rich's comments?
Yeah, I have one.
Yeah. Yes.
I had my fireplace insert service today. I had a chance to talk to the guy and said he wasn't really aware about the changeout program currently, but he asked me a question I wanted to ask you. He said, well, in the past, he remembers that it was an awkward, difficult process. So my question is getting the 1500 or whatever the assistance might be to swap out your swap out your wood burning stove. Is that a fairly simple process these days for the applicant?
The honest answer is not really. And that's because of conditions imposed by the state of California. It's their funds after all. So we changed it up a little bit. Right now we're certifying and contracting with installers. You've got to have a certified installer do the work. Mm-hmm. You can buy the stove anywhere. And that's a little bit different. In the past, we used to contract with the actual retail distributors and dealers, and the state felt that we needed to make sure the stoves were getting installed correctly. So we've only got a handful, and I don't have all the data on how many people, installers we have. I don't know, David, if you've got that off your, but it's probably around five or so. So we don't have a lot of installers in the area. And a lot of dealers and installers don't want to get involved because there is sometimes there can be some slow turnaround in getting paid and that sort of thing, because they have to invoice us and demonstrate. There's a lot of hoops to demonstrate that the stove got installed and that the old stove got destroyed. So there's, a lot of inspections have to take place. So yeah, it's not easy, but then it's free money too. So nothing's ever free.
But it sounds like, if I heard you right, 97 people are doing that. They've applied.
Yeah. And so far I don't have the total numbers, but we've been doing this program for the past several years. It's ranged from $25,000 per year up to $500,000 per year. Sometimes we've done it alone with our own funds. And last year, the $500,000 mark, it was with state funds. The state does not have it in their budget. So we have zero dollars for wood stove grants coming from the state next year. So we won't be obligated to use, if we decide to put money, our own money, towards a change-out program. We won't be obligated to follow all of state's protocols, but we find that they are necessary because people can game the system too. So we have to make sure we're being protected when we give away our dollars or the state funds. Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks. Tangential to that, I have a second question. We received a letter from somebody who said she'd been listening to meetings for the last 5 years or so. And she was wondering why something, these are my words, but not happening where it would be mandated that wood stoves would be not allowed in new construction and so forth. And I just wanted to ask, is that in our purview?
It's not really in our purview. We don't, as an air district, we don't have the regulatory authority to regulate households. We don't have any ability to march into somebody's house and see what kind of stove, or even see if they're burning trash, for instance, even though we may smell it. So that's been problematic. We're not a utility. We do not get money from people for operating their stoves, so they're not giving us any money. Mm-hmm. We're a utility, you know, can give you low flow showers and rebates and that sort of thing. We're not a utility. So it's been challenging. We did try to work with the Real Estate Association that's primarily up in the San Lorenzo Valley area. And they just felt with all the other requirements and documents that they have to fill out when somebody disclosures when they buy a home, they were not accepting and vowed to fight us at the state and national level as they did in the Bay Area. And quite honestly, we just don't have enough money as their lobby. So we told them we would provide them information for homeowners that are buying new homes to let them know that this program is available. But there was one district in South Lake Tahoe that was able to develop a rule that required change out at the time of point of sale. So you would get a new or EPA certified stove installed when you sold your home before or after. And that's not required. We don't have that type of rule here. It is up to the individual cities, and the counties can develop that type of ordinance. And to be honest, we're seeing a lot of cities and counties moving towards electrification, especially now that we have 3CE, Central Coast Community Power. A lot of people have electrified their homes and pulled out gas-fired devices, because natural gas is sort of going the way of the dinosaur too, especially if electricity prices keep on coming down. So we have been offering money for mini split heat pumps, for instance, which are electric and they can be installed. And then I should finally, without making this a new agenda item, just say that there's a considerable consternation at the federal level right now, because it looks like some of the new EPA certified stoves don't really meet the limits that they were intended to meet and the standards that were developed by EPA. It's because of testing methodology. They basically burn clean, dry wood, and that's never as polluting as what people typically burn in their fireplaces and wood stoves. So it's a changing dynamic. But in answer to that letter that we received, I want the board to know that we've literally spent millions of dollars on wood stove changeout, educational outreach, monitoring, and you name it. So we've been very active in that area, but we have not been able to put in a change out at point of sale regulation.
Thank you for the thorough answer.
Yeah, thanks, Rich. Anybody else? Questions?
Director Carbone has her hand raised.
Oh, there you go. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, I just wanted to mention that we have had a city council meeting last night, and we had a presentation with Tim Flanagan with the Regional Waste on their new organics waste program that they need to start up. And I had brought up the, you know, I brought up the, what about the odors that's going on out there at the dump? And he proceeded to tell me that, you know, Monterey One Water, all the different things that you had reported out last month, Rich, he brought those all up. And he said that they are going to be doing a study, odor nuisance study. And so I just brought it up, you know, for the city council and to their attention too. So, because they are going to, you know, I mentioned about Keith's day operation and all that, and that this year is going to, you know, maybe it, is it going to cause more odors, but they said that they will be planning on some type of new processing area or something for that. But I did bring that up. So
I just to fill in there, you know, we've been in contact with the landfill. They've got their challenges too. They've got excess of H2S, hydrous and sulfide gas, because of all the construction materials being deposited in landfill. And so they're designing emission control devices to rein in, to be within their pollute emission limits of their permits. In addition, they have a lot of leaks coming out of the landfill from methane. And so we're working with them, since we're implementing the state's methane program at landfills as well. So they do have some challenges there. And we know that odors can hitch a ride on H2S and also on methane. So yeah, that's why I say there's a lot of people, everybody likes to point their fingers elsewhere, but I think there's plenty of blame to go around.
Okay. Thank you, Rich. Let's see, I'm looking, I don't see any other hands. Okay, thank you. So just going to the public to see if there's anything, the public, any questions, any comments? Don't see any. Nothing received, Dan. Okay. Okay, so moving on to the consent agenda, we have five items. Is there any member of the board that would like to pull an item from the consent agenda? And raise your hand or... Okay, seeing none, go into the public, not seeing anyone. Nope, okay. So we'll go ahead and entertain a motion to approve the five consent items as soon as...
I'll move approval of consent agenda today.
Thank you, Director
Lopez.
Okay, we have a motion from Askew and a second from Lopez. Ann, will you go ahead and call the roll?
Right. When I call your name, please answer in the affirmative or negative. Director Lopez?
Yes.
Director Dillis?
Yes.
Director Phillips?
Aye.
Director Kosnicki?
Aye.
Director Carbone?
Yes.
Director Labar?
Aye.
Director Story?
Aye.
Down here. Director McShane?
Yes.
Director Root Askew?
Aye.
Director Friend?
Aye.
Did I miss anybody?
You missed me and Ryan Coonerty.
I was afraid of that, got stuck right in the middle there. Director Coonerty.
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. We have one action item on our regular agenda here, and we'll hand that over to Rich.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. So Alan Romero will give a presentation, but let me give just an introduction. This is represents a pretty significant change to our AB 2766 program. As such, we thought it necessary to involve the advisory committee, which we did, and Alan will be discussing some of their recommendations for the board or to the board. And then, you know, we have a lot of moving parts. So what you'll hear from Alan is we don't have a lot of data on some of these, so we can't back up some of the levels of support that we want to provide for incentives and that so forth. So we're looking to the board to give us some suggestions and feedback and comment on where they think we should go or where you think we should go. This will be coming back to you, but we're looking for sort of a proof and concept on how to further implement the program. And I'll just remind the board, as you recall, some of you way back when, this used to be a pretty contentious process. We've made it much greatly improved over the years. It's easier to implement and to figure out from the public's perspective. So we still have the money that we're providing in grant form, and we want to change up a little bit how that money gets distributed. And for that, I'll turn to Alan, and he's got a presentation, a PowerPoint for you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair McShane and members of the Board of Directors. I'm going to attempt to do this again and not share my screen. Let's see how that goes. I think that's the one right there. Let's see, is that when I got to hit the share button? That's right. Before that though, I want to do, on behalf of St. Patrick's Day, I had my green wave in my background there. So happy St. Patrick's Day. So with that, I'd like to get the slideshow going from the beginning. This is the fiscal year 2021-2022 AB 2766 Motor Vehicle Emission Reduction Program. This program represents our 31 years in participating in this program, awarding over $38 million for over 600 projects. And as I do every year, I just, as a background information, we are authorized by the California Health and Safety Code to collect a $4 fee from the DMV rolls into our budget to use every year. And every year we come to the board with our criteria and procedures. And we anticipate going about. This particular fiscal year, we have done as we have in the last three. We have two major components of the program. The first one being the Clean Air Management Program, which has three components to it: roundabout design and construction, the use of adaptive traffic signal control, and last year we added advanced clean transportation, which is the funding scrap and replacement of conventional fuel vehicles with all electric vehicles. This year, we're coming to the board with a proposed addition. Under ACT, we have typically done public agency awards, which I will give examples of later on in the presentation. We're looking to come to the board for guidance and or comment, as Rich mentioned, in adding the private sector fleets to participate in this program as well. And I'll explain more at that as we go further along. The second major component of this program is the Clean Vehicle Program. This includes a voucher replacement program for public agencies. We award them incentive vouchers they have to scrap and replace with all electric vehicles in the light duty category. Secondly, is the most popular one that we've done in the last 5 years, which is an electric vehicle incentive program for residents in the three counties. These include light duty all electric vehicles or BEVs and the plug-in electric vehicle variety, PHEVs we call them. We've over the years, we've done electric motorcycles as well. And as Rich mentioned this year, maybe he didn't, or I think we are going to propose the addition of incentivizing electric bicycles, and more on that as we go further ahead. Sticking with the first component of our program, I wanted to show the board, especially the new members, examples of what we've done in the past. We have successfully done several roundabout projects. One of our biggest and most famous is the Holman Highway project, which concluded several years ago, Highway 1 and Highway 68 interface. It is an excellent design. It moves traffic very, very well, which is what roundabouts are supposed to do. I drive it every day, and I'm grateful that we participated in actually funding all of the design effort in that particular roundabout. In fiscal year 2018-19, we offered the City of Soledad some funding also to do their first roundabout at East Street and Metz Road. This should complete quarter three of this year. We've also done projects with the City of Salinas. This one completed 100% design PS&E. That was fiscal year 2018 and 19. This was a huge project with the City of Salinas. It's the East Baranda West Development Project. It involves four roundabout design and constructions, and you can see they're all off of East Baranda, McKinnon Street, El Dorado, Natividad, and Independence Boulevard. This particular design and this particular development should offer tremendous congestion management relief along that very, very busy corridor. Moving on with the other aspects of the Clean Air Management Program are the use of adaptive traffic signal control. If you're not familiar with these systems, They are a technological advancement over the last 5 years. Instead of just using a static time of day plan, which is located at the controller side at each signalized intersection, there is an interface based on detection, typically video and sensory detection. And that is real time. And so the computer in the controller box now is able to adapt because it's seeing traffic as it happens live. We started doing these projects. The first one went to the city of Salinas back in fiscal year 2013 and 14. Since then, we have added that endeavor to the city of Monterey, which has done 4 major projects. And from this map, which I'm very happy to present to you, shows you what progress has been made. The red stripes are in progress. The blue stripes are already running this particular adaptive system. That would be Lighthouse Avenue, Del Monte, and Fremont Street on the west side. In progress is in parallel with Lighthouse Avenue is Foam. And then also looking at Munros and Fremont as well, that south corridor. And also proposed in the green is Pacific Street and Franklin, 2 of the oldest signalized intersections in the city of Monterey. And you might ask yourself, why do we do these projects? And the reason is of the benefit and emission reduction. Direct emission reduction is significant. And I wanted to point out these numbers. So with the very first phase one that we did with the city of Monterey, that represented 3.1 tons per year of NOx and ROG emission reduction. The next phase was Del Monte and Fremont, which represented 3.2 tons per year. The following phase 3 was an expansion of both phase 1 and 2. So those 2 numbers in red up there are already accounted for in the 10.8, but 10.8 tons per year in all of those 3 legs. It's really significant. For phase 3 at Munros and Foam, we calculated 7.8 tons per year. It's still in development. It's not quite complete. And the most recent one was Pacific Street in Franklin at 1.4 tons per year. Excuse me. We have a 2 other operational projects that are running and have been running for several years now in the city of Watsonville. Fiscal year 2014 and 15 along Freedom Boulevard. That is actually, these are actual numbers, 1.2 tons per year. Fiscal year 2016 and 17, which was Green Valley Road to Main Street with a reduction of average of about 2.1 tons per year. These are actually measurable. And then lastly, our most recent adaptive projects are with the city of Capitola. It's a joint project with the county of Santa Cruz, which we're very excited about. Those of you who have driven 41st Avenue know what a nightmare it is in terms of congestion. So all along the 41st Avenue corridor, interfacing with the Soquel Drive corridor, we've got 13 signalized control intersections that will be adaptive. Hopefully we're gonna finish this up within the next 2 years. Moving on to advanced clean transportation. This is an example of 2 electric trolleys that the Air District provided grant funding for. That's Amanda Rotello with her crew from the city of Santa Cruz. These electric trolleys replace these CNG trolleys that ran from downtown Santa Cruz to the wharf. And that project funded 2 of those. This was the first one, and the last one was delivered last year in December. These are really, really nice electric shuttles for 14 passenger. You can see the wheelchair ramp in the back to accommodate ADA. And unfortunately, these vehicles are brand new and still sitting in the barn because of COVID, but we expect to see them hopefully running and operational this summer. The transit agencies have taken advantage of this as well. They're under regulation to clean all of their buses up by going all electric by 2040 under the ICT. We have awarded 3 buses to Monterey Salinas Transit. The first electric bus was a BYD 38 passenger, and they're expected to take delivery of 2 brand new Gilligs sometime later this year, probably Q3. We also awarded under ACT to the city of Salinas 3 conversions. So we're looking at 2 flatbed trucks and 1 box truck. As you see these examples, these are actually made by Phoenix Motors, and they will be taking delivery of these trucks in Q3 of this year as well. So one might ask, what's all the hype about medium to heavy duty fleet electrification? Well, it's pretty big in the state of California. ARB, the CEC, and a lot of the other state agencies are using pass-through monies to get all of the fleets in California electrified. The governor's come out with his executive order to be all electric in sales by 2040. And I wanted to point out that the Environmental Defense Fund just recently published this white paper this month, highlighting some of the benefits of electrification. And I think it's just, it's pretty amazing when you look at them. 57,000 premature deaths will be prevented by 2050. More importantly, the amount of metric tons of greenhouse gas pollution reduction by 2015 is 4.7 billion. Significantly also is NOx pollution reduction by more than 10 million tons in 2050, as well as PM, which is coming out of a diesel engine at 2.5 micron, is a toxic carcinogen. And they're looking at the reduction estimates are 200,000 tons by 2050. This one's interesting. And $485 billion in health and environmental benefits will be saved as a byproduct of electrification and the pollution reduction. So our emphasis and focusing on medium to heavy duty fleets, this is one of the reasons why. On our other component of the clean vehicle program is probably the most popular is our light duty electrical vehicle incentive program. This is a shot of some of our staff with us. These are all electric vehicles that are at the Air District right now. Some are personally owned, two belong to the district that we operate. Some performance metrics starting with fiscal year 2017 and concluding with this recent last fiscal year. And you can see the numbers as they have, these are all recipients of these incentive awards. And you'll see a little trend that starts to go up. It culminates at 383 in 20. And then this last fiscal year, we concluded at 243. The reason behind that is the relationship between the amount of incentive. Obviously, the higher the incentive, the fewer the applicants, the lower your incentive, the more applicants you get. In fiscal year 2021, we reached at $1,000 per, we reached 383 recipients, which was the highest we've ever done. And we didn't even spend all of that money, but it just kind of shows where the sweet spot is. And so going forward, I'll go over these totals in a minute, where we intend to go with this next program. But we find this particular program to be extremely successful and hope to keep going with it. So looking at the fiscal year 2021-2022 proposed funding, we have a total of $1.2 million for the Clean Air Management Program. We typically do the breakdown this way, $400K for roundabout, $400 for adaptive, and $400 for advanced clean transportation. In looking at proposing private sector, we'll offer $200,000 to a private sector fleet owner. And the reason why we feel that the private sector needs to be served in this regard, is we think about all the small fleets that operate locally, you might want to call them last mile deliveries within the three counties. There are quite a few fleet owners from fleet ownership of one vehicle to five vehicles in that class 2B to class 6 range. And that's about 8,900 pounds up to 14,000 pounds. A bunch of these, we would certainly like to help these people electrify because they're going to need to do it. But by the way, by doing it now, we actually garner surplus emission reduction, which is the gold standard for projects like our programs like Moyer. In other words, the recipient garners these emission reductions before he's regulated to do it. So that's a big benefit. Get it done early. The clean vehicle program this year, we're looking to allocate $500,000. We will still offer the EV voucher replacement incentive for public agencies, although this has been pretty unpopular, mainly because of the lack of funding on the public agency side. The EVIT program for our residents this year, we're looking at taking that number to $1,500 for a full electric vehicle, $750 for a plug-in. Last year we did $2,000 for an electric vehicle. And same thing with the electric motorcycles, we're looking at $300. We did the same thing last year. And under this proposed program addition, we're looking at incentivizing the purchase of an e-bicycle at $150 per purchase. The program restrictions or requirements will actually incentivize low-income disadvantaged communities, and we'll double all of these amounts knowing that if there's verification that the applicant is low income or disadvantaged. And lastly, just for the benefit of the newer members, this is how the clean air management funds are allocated. They're done by population since these are DMV monies. And so Monterey gets 57% based on population total for the county, 35% for Santa Cruz, and 8% for San Benito. And with that, I certainly would ask and receive questions and response, comments, et cetera.
Okay. Well, thank you, Alan, for such a great presentation. Is this an action item, Rich? Or are we, it's coming back, right? So.
Yes. It's just to provide direction.
Yeah. Okay.
At this point.
All right. So feedback, direction. I'm just looking for hands here.
Mr. Chair, it actually is calling for the adoption of a resolution.
Okay. Well, I saw that. So, okay. Unless there's more clarification, let's just start with some feedback. So we'll start with Director Phillips, and then we'll go to Director Askew.
I'm glad Director Askew got her e-bike early. I haven't got mine yet, and I live in Prunedale. I'm a disadvantaged community, so I'm glad I put off getting my e-bike. So she's a big advocate of that. So
you bet, yeah. Director Askew.
Thank you. And I actually got mine used from my mom because she had bought it during the pandemic and then wasn't able to ride it. So anyway, I never would have gone out and spent the money on my own had it not showed up in my garage. So the questions I have actually are in regards to, and maybe just help me understand what direction we're able to give at this point. So I'm really pleased to see the addition of the e-bikes included in the portion of the incentive, the EV voucher replacement incentive program. And I think the questions that I had were specific to within that program, could we allocate either a certain percentage of funds for the different categories to ensure that it really does get out to where we want it to get out to? Or could it be like a certain number, you know, if the amount of funds differ based on who's getting the incentive and their disadvantaged level, could we allocate a certain number of awards for e-bikes, for instance? And I think, you know, just to frame out where I'm coming from, you know, we've got in Marina, CSUMB, the former Fort Ord area, we do have a huge opportunity to decrease vehicle emissions by supporting the adoption of e-bikes. My commute to work is not far, but since getting this e-bike, I literally don't drive around town anymore. And I know that we have whole student populations living, you know, within 5 miles of town, that if we were able to find a way for them to be able to afford to purchase e-bikes, we have, you know, a need for more infrastructure, but with the four-tag, more infrastructure is coming. And the more that we can encourage people to be on their bikes, the more it's going to support the kinds of infrastructure that are going to support alternatives to driving, at least for around town trips. So I think $150 is a great start. I'd love to see it be more, but at the very least, I'd love to be able to have like a minimum allocation that we put towards that, the addition of that category.
Great. Thank you. Rich, or you had
feedback? Yeah, well, if I may, the advisory committee was a little bit dubious on this because we have absolutely no data whatsoever on whether or not this is going to really turn the course and actually reduce emissions, although there's anecdotal data. But we also have data, and there was discussion that a lot of e-bikes are going to be outlawed from riding on bikeways, and certainly in the backcountry and that sort of thing, which probably wouldn't address this issue, but they're becoming a problem for regular cyclists on bikeways because they are motorized. So we're not sure exactly where this is going. We're not sure what the demand is. And to be honest, we just used a rough proportion for the incentive amount relative to what we do for vehicles. So, you know, that was sort of pulled out of thin air, but we do know that electric vehicles, when we get those on the road, they are displacing in most situations, you know, internal combustion engines. So it would be, since we don't have any data, we don't know what the demand is, I would recommend that we sort of proceed and see how it happens. At this point, there's no cap on, you know, how many bikes we could fund, but we would hate to see that we just have all these fleets of bikes that are stranded eventually and that cannot be used for commuting and are displacing the incentive for the electric vehicle where this was originally intended. So there's a lot of unknowns here. I'm not sure. I suppose we should talk to and maybe Director Askew, Root Askew knows about the planning at CSUMB if they're anticipating a huge influx in electric bikes and if those are something that's going to be allowed on their bike paths or be required to move to the surface streets. So there's a lot of unknowns here. I think, you know, as we did when we first started this program, we sort of set some parameters up and then we sort of got some feedback and we've adjusted it over the years. So certainly going forward, if it's highly successful, we can make adjustments to the program. Especially one of the things we're talking about is some sort of survey to make sure that people that actually use these bikes, we get some sort of indication that it will be displacing a vehicle so that we know that we're at least getting some emission reductions, which is what the program's all about. If people are just voluntarily using electric bikes and they usually normally rode their bicycle, that's a zero sum game for us. So we certainly want to have some data and we'll probably only be able to do that through some sort of survey or application process to get that information. So right now, we propose to move forward with what we've proposed and then do some data mining in the future to see how that it looks. And we certainly will share that with the board as we move forward as well. So outside of that, you could, if you thought that was not an appropriate amount of incentive, we certainly could look at increasing it or decreasing it. We have demonstrated that, you know, the lower the incentive, it's sometimes we can get at more vehicles that way. So it's just one of those unknown unknowns, as our former defense secretary would say.
Thanks, Rich. We have a few hands up. Why don't we start with Zach, Director Friend?
Thanks, Chair McShane. And I actually share the concerns of the advisory group and some of the points that were just brought up by Mr. Stedman, in regards to this. I mean, we've had pretty extensive conversations. I know you kind of blew past it at the beginning, Rich, but I've been fortunate enough to be on the board long enough to remember that these were pretty controversial discussions over this funding. And I thought we arrived on a pretty transparent place, which is that you've got an actual reduction number that's quantified. And while the board still has the ability to not necessarily choose the recommended projects that Alan did all this analysis for, realistically, that's what the Air District is here to do. And I think that I'm just not sold that funding for this would necessarily do what the Air District's goals are. We also have to remember what the Air District's actual purpose is. And I think that there's a little bit of scope creep when you start funding things like e-bikes. I mean, the county, for example, of Santa Cruz has incentive programs for employees. I think that's one thing, but the Air District's goal through how it's funded through a DMV program and what AB 2766 says, I think this is a bit of a stretch. So I'm comfortable with the recommended actions, but I'm actually going to asterisk it with that. I'm going to look at it from a pretty skeptical lens because I just don't think that this is really going to make that much of a difference either in incenting people to transition from something to this, or B, that it's actually going to make that much of a difference for air quality in the region. And so, I'm all for a pilot and doing some sort of analysis, but at the end of the day, I think that a year from now, I don't see myself supporting a continuation or expansion of this kind of situation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep, thank you very much, Director Friend. We'll move on to Director Lopez.
First, I want to start by saying I was a little offended when Supervisor Askew and Supervisor Phillips created an e-bike club and didn't invite me. And now that the Brown Act is in place, I can't join. And so I feel a little left out down here in South County.
Well, you should be.
No, I just, you know, I wanted to talk to some of the policy issues that Zach brought up as well, just making sure that we all have our own boards, right? He spoke about scope creep, but also the ability for us to encourage within our own groups the use in unique ways. I think one of those is advocacy for allowance in certain parks. I know I've been, this Tuesday, I drummed on that for specifically Lake San Antonio, knowing that there's folks who want to create races and things that don't currently exist within parks. So creating that venue and perhaps creating a community here on the Central Coast, or at least an opportunity where people see us as a destination to visit our counties to ride their bikes, I think is a great thought. And I would hope that a year from now with a pilot program, as he spoke about, we could be in with finding ourselves in a different position, encouraging additional growth, finding success in those methods. And so, you know, obviously I was an early adopter on electric vehicles, still love my Chevy Volt with nearly 300,000 miles on it, mostly on the electric side. But just as we continue to move forward, looking for opportunity in this market and creating a space for e-bikes to flourish and creating that opportunity even in communities that are rural like mine, I think are critical. So just wanted to share that perspective and appreciate the conversation and the willingness of everybody to consider. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Director Lopez. I don't see any other hands. It seems like, oh, there's Director Phillips and then Director Askew. So yeah, Director Phillips.
He drives a Volt and I still drive my 66 Malibu with a big block engine in it. So, you know, that we balance out. But, you know, Richard brings up a good point. Like for depends on where you live that maybe the e-bikes really can be effective. Like for me, I want to get them, but I can't ride around where I am. So I'm going to have to put them in a truck and or on a carrier to get someplace where I can ride it. So it really wouldn't accomplish what our goal would be where Wendy lives or someone lives with 4 to 5 miles around there. You could see that really be effective. It could replace needing a car or a vehicle. So it's interesting. I look forward to us looking at this in a year and see what kind of impact it has had.
Thank you, Director Phillips. I think we're getting there. Director Askew?
Yeah, I just wanted to circle back to Director Friend's question about the goal of the program and the incentive being the reason that pushes someone to switch over from a gas car to an electric car. And I'm just thinking about the people that I know that have made that switch, like they were committed to making that switch. And I don't know that incentives were what pushed them over the edge. And they were all individuals who had capacity to make that purchase regardless. Do we have any information about how the incentive has actually been the factor that causes someone to make that EV purchase? I was just curious, Zach, you raised the question and I think it's a really good one.
Director, we don't have any direct data on that. We rely on the state, which just received an audit on the programs and many of their programs. And that was one of the sightings that they don't have good enough data. However, I will say this, that for instance, you can no longer buy a Tesla S using state funds. And we follow those guidelines because the state, and I think we would agree, felt that why incentivize a vehicle that's costing over $60,000? So there have been some shifts, but we call it an incentive and not a rebate. And that's important to consider that you have to do your work up front. You're not gonna get if you go out and buy one and you didn't know about the program, you can't come to us later and say, we want the money for it. So you have to do your homework. And we've of course been letting people know, but we've been very careful to call it an incentive and not a rebate. But yeah, we don't have really good data on that, but we have anecdotally, again, been told by numerous people that when you combine all the various rebates or incentives that are available through California, through our district, and now through 3CE, and the federal tax benefit, It actually makes new vehicles less expensive than purchasing a used Tesla 3, Model 3, for instance. We've been told that people said, yeah, I wasn't going to buy one, but that helped us make the decision. So it's really hard to quantify those types of approaches. I don't see this going to, as the price comes down on EVs and they're competing nose to nose with internal combustion engine vehicles, I don't think there will be a need for an incentive at that point. But until we get that, it's just like computers, we liken it to that. The pioneers were the people that could afford it, and now it's available to most. So those are really good points. We do know that switching to an EV from an internal combustion engine fueled vehicle, that fossil fuel vehicle, that there are considerable emission reductions. But we're not requiring people to destroy a vehicle either, which is something we do with some of our grant programs. So that could be something that we look into the future too. You have to destroy your gasoline powered vehicle before you're eligible to receive an incentive. So, we're sort of looking at what the state does is sort of leading the way, and we follow suit, but we're gonna be working in tandem with 3CE2 on their program, since we don't wanna have two pretty divergent programs, because that just only confuses the public. So hopefully if you live in the three counties of Monterey, Santa Cruz, and San Benito, you'll have an additional benefit because of the air district in combining 3CE with our incentive package. So you can get probably twice the incentive for these three counties. So yeah, those are points well taken. I think it's been dubious all along. I can see both sides of the coin, but I'd say this is gonna be ending, and I wanna maximize those public dollars. So that's why we're talking about reducing the amount and getting back to that sweet spot. So in preliminary conversation with 3C, it looks like they're talking about a $1,500 amount too. And that's one of the reasons we've stuck with that number.
Thanks, Rich. We have Director Coonerty, and then I think we're pretty close with consensus. Director Coonerty?
Yeah, thank you. And I think Rich just sort of briefly hit on this, but I wanted to ask, this is my question, which is, you were saying that the used vehicles are now sort of price comparable to the new vehicles. Because I was sort of interested in whether we could bump up the used vehicle under the theory that used vehicles are more likely to be utilized by low income people than buying a new vehicle. But if the prices are the same, then that's not necessarily true.
Yeah, some of the used vehicle prices are actually really competitive, and more so than even some of the fossil fuel vehicles. You can get a 2017, Alan, correct me if I'm way off, but I've seen them go for less than $9,000.
Right.
So we're incentivizing that. So they're out there, deals are out there, and if people are willing to hunt for them. The best thing, of course, about an electric vehicle is the reduced maintenance, oil changes, and that sort of thing, besides the no use of fuel. So we could look into that, but I think we could take a closer look and see what other data is out there and make some adjustments.
I guess that would be my question is, can you, would it be worth it in terms of incentivizing the most in order to have essentially the use of the new vehicle incentive be the same, with the idea that it's a benefit for lower income people. That's a target population on the basis of equity we want to hit, probably wouldn't otherwise buy an electric vehicle. But this incentive really may make the difference. And the second comment was, on e-bikes, one of the issues is that students, for instance, you help them buy e-bikes, they leave after a couple years. And so maybe the longer term plan would be to work with UCSC and have them stop, have a shared bike program, that are discounted bike programs, so that the bikes stay in rotation, even though the students may leave, for example. And the same
thing. Excellent suggestions. And we can look into that. one of the issues has been in the beginning is there weren't that many used vehicles available. And now we're seeing turnover of the fleet. So we expect a lot more to come on that are off lease and that sort of thing. So with respect to the bikes, yeah, we're going to try to put some data together and see how that all comes out. But I think this is a start, and we can tweak and modify as we go forward. And if we have good data showing emission reductions, that's certainly something that would be fit in the context of the program requirements as well as support our goals.
Thanks. Thank you, Rich. Thank you very much, Rich Coonerty. Let's move on to Director Labar and then Director Carbone.
Thank you, Chair. Appreciate staff's work and advisor committee's work on this. I feel I'm fine with moving with the pilot program on the e-bikes. My only comment is I wish the plug-in and all electric vehicles, the incentives were the same. I believe there's also a comfortability level as people cross over. So having the plug-in still at the same rate might encourage more. And while you don't get the full benefit of a full electric, you are getting a benefit moving from a hybrid or from a full gas to a hybrid. So that's my only comment. Thank you, Chair.
Well said. Yep. Yep. And Alan's nodding there. Good, good. Thank you. Good feedback. Director Carbone.
Yes, I just had a couple comments, and just currently with MST students are CSUMB and MPC, they're able to ride the bus either a free cost. Mayor Labar might be able to chime in on this, but for now, I just wanted to bring that up. I'm good with it, with the e-bikes, with what we're doing here. But I had a question for Rich. Will all fossil fuel vehicles eventually be outlawed, or by 2040, or sorry, John Phillips, about your 66 Chevelle, but eventually, you know, with fossil fuel vehicles, will they eventually, you know, go away?
So that's a great question, Director Carbone. The answer is that no, you can still use your fossil fuel vehicle. You can still sell your used fossil fuel vehicle. They may go up in value. They may go down in value. I don't know. But you cannot buy a new fossil fuel vehicle at that time when the governor, should the executive order come into place. So that's for all sales of new vehicles. And indeed, we've seen all the manufacturers, or most of the manufacturers, commit to that, to have all electric fleets by that period.
Thank you.
Good, thank you. Seeing no other hands, the agenda reflects an action item, a resolution. And Rich, I know you said it might come back. So do we just decide to table this until next meeting? What would you prefer? Does Alan have what he needs? What would you say is your recommended course of action?
I'm going to defer to Alan here. Alan, what do you need to move forward? Typically, we're going to have this approved.
What's good about our proposal for the e-bikes is that we have until July 1, because the program won't even launch until then. So we have up until that period to hear back from the board, or we would present back to the board if we have some more data that we can present, which I'd like to add after all these great comments, that I really wanted just to kind of update the board that in my conversations with UCSC and the city of Monterey, this is going to be a challenging issue for at least a couple of years. The same thing was, in a sense, where it was to be said about electrical vehicles. When the very first Nissan Leaf came out in 2012, it didn't do well. It continued not to do well. And one of the biggest reasons why was because of range. It's going to be the same thing with the e-bikes. As more and more e-bike manufacturers come to the forefront, and as many of them go out of business, people are going to be very hesitant about dropping a couple grand for an e-bike. So a start out with an incentive like $150, which, as Rich said, is proportional to what we've done with the rest of the vehicles, we get to see what that's like. We also, I forgot to mention that if you are in a disadvantaged community, as Director Lopez pointed out, we will double that amount for any of the vehicles that are on the eligibility list for our program. So whether it's a Bolt or a Tesla Model 3, which is under 60,000, we will double if you're, we use Central Coast Energy Services to do our third party certification in terms of low income. But we it's funny, we started to do this. The numbers have been stable over the last 3 years. And I also wanted to address a comment from Director Udescu. We offered incentivizing used vehicles 3 years ago. For the first 2 years, it was stable. We did 15 used vehicles per year. The third year, it went up to 53, which is tremendous. It's like, so as these vehicles came into the marketplace off the lease fleets, it became more attractive. And Director Machine knows this. You can get a really good deal on a used lease car that comes into the market. So yeah. I think we're okay with respect to limits there. We'd just like to see some more participation. Once again, if we can get that outreach to the disadvantaged communities to buy a used electric vehicle, we'll double that amount.
So Alan, the question I have to you is, do we need a resolution to have you move forward since we're going to bring this back to the board?
Yeah, I think it's a good place to start because like I said, we can always come back to the EVIP stuff.
Yeah, and I think there's consensus with what's there and what's before us. I certainly agree with the e-bike. We'll have to look at it and we'll see where it goes. So, okay. All right. So with that, let's go to the public very quick to see if there's any raised hands from the public.
May I interject something?
David. Yes. Sorry.
Yes. We do need to have a resolution because we actually start our application period for a clean air management program starting right after this meeting. So we start our application period to get the applications for adaptive signal control and for roundabouts.
Great. Nope. Thank you for that clarification. I don't see any hands in the panel. Okay. And then, Anne, did you receive anything? Nope. Okay. So we are looking for a motion to approve the resolution.
This is Lopez. I'll make the motion and offer John Phillips's Chevelle as tribute. Okay, without the Chevelle, I'll make the motion.
All right, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Labar, second.
Okay, we have a motion from Lopez, a second from Labar. Anne, will you call the roll?
When I call your name, please answer in the affirmative or negative, and hopefully I don't miss anybody. Director Lopez?
Yes.
Director Dillis?
Aye.
Director Phillips?
Aye. Just for the record, I have two Chevelles.
Is that votes? Director Kosmicki?
Aye.
Director Carbone?
Yes.
Director Labar?
Aye.
Director Coonerty?
Aye.
Director Story?
Aye.
Director McShane?
Yes.
Director Rudescu? Aye. Director Friend?
Aye.
Did I miss anybody? Okay, motion passes unanimously.
Thank you, Anne. Thank you, David. And certainly thank you, Alan. Okay, so that concludes our regular action items. And we are now headed for closed session. Les, anything you'd like to share as we go into closed session?
Just that I had sent out previously a separate invitation via Zoom to the closed session. So if the directors would please look for that, let me know if you didn't get it or can't find it and I can resend it. And there will be no report out of closed session today. So the board will adjourn out of closed session.
Hey, Rosa, can you call Tom and let him know?
Okay.
I just emailed him. Yes.
Thank you.
Great. That's the end of our business. We stand adjourned. Thank you very much. And
thank you.
We'll see everybody else in closed session.